Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Yes, indeed, it is the Parenting Slot, and Joanna Fortune joins us, clinical psychotherapist specialising in child and adult psychotherapy, going through your questions. Joanna, lovely to see you.
And you too, Tom.
And I just want to reassure people that you're throughout the ad break and the news, I was getting as much information from you as possible on my own children.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think I have a few things now, thankfully, because the world of parenting is a never-ending challenge, yeah. As you will see from the questions coming at you this week. So I'll get straight stuck in, because I know people are hanging on your every word. And this one is a really interesting one to start with. 2 weeks ago, my 14-year-old son took a bottle of vodka from our drinks cabinet, and then he went to a local GAA pitch with his friends. They drank the whole thing straight, no mixers. Thankfully, another parent came upon them by chance, as they were very drunk and some were very ill. I need to address this with him. I've been so angry that I haven't sat him down yet. He doesn't realise how dangerous this was, irresponsible and illegal. I mean, where do I start? I'm so worried about this attitude to alcohol now. I'm not sleeping because of it. I need to be calm when I'm talking to him, but even this is a struggle for me. His father had a fight with him about it. I don't want it to end in an argument. Any advice? Now, I have to say, reading that, I'm looking at it and thinking, God, what a nightmare. And
yeah, but what a common nightmare, actually, because I do think that many 14, 15-year-olds, because it's such a prime age to start this kind of drinking, they see it as a rite of passage that, sure, look, I'm 14, that's what you do. But from a parenting point of view, there's always this parent is identifying the very real risk factors. So, I mean, we've a broader kind of piece to do about breaking this relationship with alcohol as a rite of passage and binge drinking in particular. But one of the reasons 14 is such a prime age for starting this is that at this age, teenagers are pushing boundaries. They're experimenting with alcohol to feel more grown up. And part of feeling grown up is keeping those grown up experiments from your parents. It's all kind of cumulatively part of their exercising or trying to exercise independence. Now, all of that being said, getting intoxicated in this way is a real worry, and I don't want to downplay or dismiss that from this parent's point of view. So they're feeling angry and disappointed, possibly in equal measure, is very, very normal parenting response. And, you know, the fact is you're not sleeping because of it. You recognize having the conversation when you're calm is ideal, but maybe he needs to see that you are really angry about this and that this was a line that was majorly crossed. So I'm going to say, don't wait until you're so calm that, you know, the moment has passed. It may be that you say, I recognize I'm really angry as I'm talking to you. And if I need to stop to calm down, I will do that. But we're having this conversation. So he gets the seriousness of it. You want to let him know that you will be talking about it, but maybe give him some kind of control in it, in that, so we're going to have this conversation, that's non-negotiable. When's a good time for you to have it?
Okay.
Now, there is no good time, because that's not an option. Yeah. It is happening. Do you want to have it on Monday evening or Tuesday morning?
Why would you be giving him that?
Because then he's going to be signing up to the conversation.
Okay.
He's consenting to it. He's saying, yeah, we'll do it Tuesday morning, as opposed to you dragging him kicking and screaming into the room when you're already on a back foot. So that's just a little bit more helpful in terms of getting your message. But give options. It's going to be Monday evening, Tuesday morning, for example, or something like that. Maybe a weekend when both of you are at home together. Explain your concerns to him in very kind of real, non-dramatic, but real terms. The risks that are involved in what they did, drinking such an amount of alcohol. Educate him on alcohol content percentage. Do not assume at 14 that he knew there was any difference in drinking a bottle of beer and a bottle of vodka. That may seem very obvious to us adults. I would not make that assumption about teenagers who are beginning to engage with alcohol. You can do all kinds of things about the risks involved, like outlining the risks for his developing brain, what the potential outcomes are. Link it to the here and now, because teenagers tend to not project far into the future of what this is going to mean for them in, as a grown-up. But if he's engaged in sports, make it real. This is going to cost you your place on the team. This is going to affect your fitness. This is going to affect whatever it is. This will affect your skin. This will affect your teeth. You know, make it about things that matter right here, right now. And I would also be saying, because there are some real risks here, in that he supplied your alcohol to underage kids. So you could play that up quite a bit and say he has exposed you as parents to a legal implication, and that's a major concern, that he was supplying the alcohol. And brainstorm with him in the future, if he's in situations where there is alcohol being consumed, what to do if, what to do if, and as best you can, your bottom line being, even if you are doing something you know you shouldn't be doing and you know you're getting in trouble for, I want you to know you can call us at 2 a.m. and we'll come and get you. Because that has to be the bottom line, that you are the safe base,
okay,
the secure base to return to, no matter what state he's in. But set clear boundaries and expectations. But try to explore for now what led to the binge drinking and call it that. Don't call it anything else. Binge drinking. Was this the first time? What has he learned from the experience? What is he carrying forward? Try to do it that way. Don't do it on your own. Have the conversation with each other. Get on the same page.
Yeah.
As parents, be very aware of your own relationship to alcohol. And anyone else who's listening, whose child is not even remotely 14, please be aware to have this conversation young and grow it up as they grow up.
I have a quick word for the father as well. He had a fight with him now.
I
can identify that with a bit. He kind of, I imagined, exploded.
In anger. And justified context-based anger. But he needs to go back and say, I'm not as angry now and we're still going to have this conversation. The reason we had the fight was I was really, really upset and scared and worried, and it came out like anger. Explain it.
Yeah, very good. My daughter is 11 and recently saw two women kissing on TV. She asked a lot of questions and I just brushed it off the time without answering them fully and giving her quick answers. I was simply taken a little off guard and wasn't prepared. At what age should I explain about same-sex relationships? I'm not even sure if she's had sex education in school yet. A confused dad.
Okay, so the question is, at what age should you explain? I'm going to say now, right now. And the reason being, she's asking about it now, so she's ready for the information now.
Now, that is a bone of contention in our house, because
that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, because I would be more inclined to do that.
Yeah.
I kind of feel, if I'm asked a question, I'm very straight at giving sometimes an answer that my wife would say she's not ready for that information yet. So I pull myself back and I'm not sure.
I would say if a child is asking you a question, they are ready for the answer, the information that they're asking for. But
even
be very
in the middle of what we just came through with the repeal the 8th referendum, where they're seeing posters.
But this is it. The conversation is happening around them and they are exposed to it.
Okay.
So you do want your parental message to be the one they default to. Now, being really careful that you, when they answer the, they ask you a question, this isn't you going, right, I'm prepared for this. And you take your deep breath and your pre-prepared speech about masses of detail they did not ask you. You answer the question that was asked, no more. And then they may come back to you with that little piece of information with more questions, and then you give them more.
They're
in
hard
response
conversations.
To those. They are really hard conversations.
In the midst of, you know, considering that you are having conversations with them about the tooth fairy.
Yeah.
And that level
of
conversation. And then you're talking about the posters that we saw during the referendum.
Yeah.
They're like two worlds that are very hard
they
to...
They are. And you see, when they're exposed to other messaging, a question is the most normal, healthy thing she could be doing, because she has seen something and she is seeking to make sense of it for herself. And she's going to the person she trusts to help her do that, which is her parent. There's so much positive in that. She's not going to the internet or, you know, Dr. Google, because putting in a very, you know, simple question like this into the internet would expose her to goodness knows what. So it is better that you answer the question when it is asked, even if it means you saying, that's a question I haven't thought about answering. So give me a little while to think about it and I'll come back to you. Don't be afraid to buy yourself time as a parent. You do not have to have all of the answers on the spot, because they are hard to do.
Right. You would be, I don't know, she's particularly asking about this, you know, two women kissing, which I think you can explain. They love each other.
Yeah.
It's easy enough.
Be concise, be factual, use proper language. Don't fudge it. Ask her what she thinks about it. Find out where she's from and keep the door open for more questions afterwards. But she's already asked you and you acknowledge you've kind of brushed it off. So I'd be saying, go back to her and say you've thought about it and you don't think you answered her question right. And you'd like to now talk about it and make sure you do answer it.
Right. I'm glad this assigned a confused dad, because I'm still being slightly confused in this, because I may have jumped to the posters a bit too much, because they really are bringing you into a world of hard, really hard fact
of life.
I
think a lot of those, any poster campaign can be very affecting of us adults.
Yes.
And it brings up a lot of emotions for us. And that's not often our best place to begin answering questions for children from, because we're dealing with a myriad of feelings stirred up. So buying yourself time is the parental goal.
Do you kind of, I don't know if sugarcoat it, but kind of keep it in the terms that they're used to dealing with?
Yeah, I think keep it simple. But that doesn't mean lying. That doesn't mean dressing it up or dismissing it.
Okay.
It means giving short, concise, factual answers. It also means maybe practicing how you're going to answer this on each other as parents. Partly it means that you're both singing from the same hymn sheet, but also it means you get to hear yourself say it out loud and go, oh no, that's not going to work. I'm right. getting myself all tied up. Let me go back and start over. So that when you go to your child, you have it nailed.
Okay.
That's what you want.
I see a lot of parents practicing.
Supreme confidence. Fake it till you make it.
Right. That's where we carry on. For your text, 53106 for your text. Why is this mother trying to reason with him and be calm with him? Let him, this is on the lad drinking the alcohol. Let him feel the brunt of your frustration. You can't reason with a teen.
Oh, you can, but I think there's some truth in that. I mean, yes, he should know you're upset and angry because that is exactly how you're feeling. And I think my inference is she wants to wait until she's calm so that she can be more effective in changing his behaviour rather than talking at him. She wants to talk with him. And that's admirable, I think, in this situation.
Okay. Another texter says, is it fair to scare the kids with the illegal side of it? I mean, as adults, we go out every week and get drunk beyond belief. And then we're surprised our kids copy us. Parents need to set the examples.
Oh, no, well, I agree. Parents need to be, and I did say that, be aware of their own relationship to alcohol. I think it is okay to introduce a legal aspect because it is an illegal behaviour, and he's 14 years old, he's not four. He can take that information, and it is about instilling a greater degree of responsibility.
Okay. One kind of quick one for you. Can you help me with the computer game Fortnite? Never heard of it. My kids get aggressive when I take controllers. All I want them to do is play it. How can I get them to stop?
Yeah, I'm amazed you haven't heard of it. I hear about it all the time. So many really? Parents asking this exact question. It's a game for children. It's a fight to the death kind of game, but it's done
well,
in very kind of young child graphics.
You know,
so it is aimed at this age group. I'm sure now much more game savvy people than me would explain that way better than I just did. But in summary, that's it. The issue we have, I don't know how old these children are for this parent. So I'm going to answer this in a very kind of generic way. Yes, there is a concern because many studies are showing us that there is a correlation, if not causation, there is a correlation with real life violence and poorer social skills, poorer pro-social skills in children who spend prolonged periods of time playing games like this. Now, just to clarify, Fortnite, because I don't know how old these children are, has a 12 years plus cert. If your child is under 12, they really shouldn't be playing this.
Okay.
And the game is telling you that from the outset. So you're saying, how can you get them to stop? I'm going to say they can't. They can't make that decision as children. You have to make the choice for them. And that's not going to be easy. They're not going to say, phew, thanks, you know, mom or dad, for stopping me playing this game that I love and I'm obsessed with. I would say instead, you're going to go back and say to them, the game is taking up too much of their time. And you're going to design a schedule, like a Monday to Sunday schedule. You're going to highlight little pockets of time on that schedule that you are happy for them to play the game. They can slot their names in for whose turn it is in the different slots. And they do that with them at the table. So that they sign up to it. Then if there's a breach of the schedule, you have it to refer back to. Look, we all agreed to this. The schedule is stuck up there. This is the time. I would say your schedule slots is a parental decision based on age. If they're very young, keep it shorter. No matter how old they are, try and keep it 45 minutes and younger. Any longer than that, you're going to get some behavioural impact. Plan some outdoor activities, especially if it's not your children's natural inclination to get outdoors. Make it interesting, especially if they're young. Plan some treasure hunts, little adventures, collecting things out on a walk to bring home and do some kind of craft thing with. A few things like that. And really, it's about looking at young children have a blur between fantasy and reality. It's very difficult for them to distinguish between what's real and not real because of their development and how they develop through imagination. So explain to them that you've noticed how their behaviour changes after they've been playing this game. Ask what they think about that and what they think about what you've noticed, and that you're trialling a family, not the kids, a family screen-free 2 weeks. Between the hours of X
family.
And Y, the whole family will be screen-free. What was that texter said? Lead by example.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the word. So... And reflect at the end of the 2 weeks, how did everyone find it and feel about it? So involve them in it. Tell them it's an experiment.
Okay, great stuff. You can send your text to 53106 for that. If you've tried a screen-free 2 weeks, let us know how you got on. We'll have more of your questions after this. You're very welcome back to the Moncrief Show. It's Tom Dunn sitting in with Sean today. Joanna Fortune is with us answering your parenting questions. A very interesting text came in on Fortnite, the computer game that you were talking about. A text is saying, should be banned, especially on headphones. My little boy started hearing voices as he was playing on the headphones. So we took the headphones off and that was fine. The game went through the speakers. Then one day we heard a man's voice asking where the kids lived and what was their address. Honestly, not good. That's now very scary.
That would be absolutely terrifying and something to take really serious. So, you know, if anyone has had an experience like that, it is worth contacting the Gardaí.
I'm trying to work out how the man's voice would get in there.
I think because you can connect with other players, I think, you know, there's anything that's Wi-Fi internet enabled, I suppose that is possible.
Yeah.
I think it's rare enough, certainly from anecdotally what I would hear, it's rare enough to happen. It's not impossible, but it should be taken seriously.
Whatever the game, don't let them use the online aspect, says another texter. Who knows who is on the other end of the headphones?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, wow. Glad that's not in our house. Back to a younger age and a younger child and another issue. I have a four-year-old girl. I'm a bit worried about her peer interaction. She seems to form very intense, exclusive relationships. For example, when we went on holidays, she decided there was one girl she wanted to play with for the whole holiday and was adamant that she wanted to play with her whenever this girl wanted to play with her or not. Similarly, in plays, school, she has a particular pal that she loved playing with. Unfortunately, this girl seems to have lost interest in my daughter. And this morning, my daughter put out her arms to hug her and the little girl just walked away. My heart is breaking for my little girl, who is only a child and an only child. I'm trying to talk to her about needing to play with everyone, etc., but I don't think I'm getting through. I hate to see her experience this rejection, but on the other hand, I wonder if it's good preparation for when she starts school next year. Would appreciate some advice.
Oh, I mean, look, it just shows the friendships and children. It's so different for each of them. And four is so young. Like, it's still so young. I mean, at 4 years old, children can certainly engage in cooperative play. Like, we observe that. But at the same time, they're still developing that capacity to consider other people's perspectives or the same situation from another's point of view. That's emerging, but it's not fully developed yet. So it may well be very difficult for your little girl, who's having the time of her life with this friend, not to see or read the cues that the friend is overwhelmed or experiencing her as too much or isn't as into the play relationship. Your daughter may be thinking, but I'm having a great time, ergo everyone's having a great time. And that's really normal. So there's nothing wrong with that. She may be assuming, or, you know, in general, children like this may be assuming that their friend thinks the same way that they do. And they can get then very upset when the friend wants to play differently, or, like you're saying here, rejects the hug or is like, no, I'm not into it. Sometimes children who play this way, they're using the exclusivity as a buffer against feeling isolated or vulnerable, but not always. But I'm just saying that in terms of the exclusivity is sometimes serving a function for them against other feelings that are quite difficult to deal with, particularly when you're four. So, I mean, you could talk to her about how people can like playing with more than one person. Say, I'm sure your friend likes playing with you, but they also like playing with other people, and helping her making that real, like, you know, the way you like spending time with mom, but you also like spending time with dad, or you like visiting with granny X, but you also like visiting with granny Y, so that she's going, oh yeah, you can like two people in the same way.
Yeah.
So your daughter may need help welcoming others into her circle. It may not be her natural inclination. So there are some practical things you can do. I know you're trying to talk to her about needing to play with everyone. The most effective way to communicate that to her is not to use words, but actions. So play it out with her. Play it out with small world characters. She's at that stage of developmental play, of taking the little puppets or the little toys and playing it out so that she gets it. Repeating the same kind of scenario over and over. Playing out about friendships. You could schedule play dates, but do so with two or more children.
That
never just
suggestion.
One-on-one.
Yeah. Invite other kids over for play dates. Let your daughter play one-on-one with new kids and eventually she'll want to play with
I don't know if I do the one-on-one because her tendency is towards exclusivity in her friendships. I think I'd be bringing two over so she's playing in a kind of triadic way, at least once in a while. And be sensitive to her temperament. She may not be a child who ever thrives on big groups of friends and may actually do better with small, more intimate friendship clusters. So she may need some support and help. But my basic line here is, don't worry too much about this. She's 4 years old. She's still developing. Her behaviours that you're seeing are partly temperament, partly developmental. I would give this time and see what happens when she does start school.
Is there a tendency possibly that we might over-empathise a bit with the child, because
And I can understand
she's still four, she's still this tiny little thing.
All parents just want their children to be happy and thriving and have friends, and having friends is seen as such a healthy overt behavior. You know, oh, my child's doing well because they have friends, or they're not doing well because they don't have friends. But we tend to see that our children are doing best if they're the most popular with a huge group of friends. And that's just not true. Like, lots of children are blissfully happy with one or two friends all through their childhood.
It happened to us when one of ours was much younger, and at the time it seemed like the end of the world. What has our little child done to that other girl? We asked ourselves. My 16-year-old daughter has been very low over the summer holidays, has made little effort to meet up with her friends, and seems disinterested in everything. She works part-time for her dad, but it's a struggle to motivate her. She says she's anxious about everything. She's going into fifth year and is already worrying about the Leaving Cert. I know this is probably a phase she's going through, but it's been very difficult. Any advice on how I can help her relax and enjoy it?
It's a worry, and it's also, you know, the summer is such a long time. I suppose I have questions in response to this question. You know, was she okay before the summer? Just reflect on that. Did this simply emerge, this behavior, in the summer? Have you observed her to be on her phone a lot? Could there possibly have been a trigger for this? You know, was there a row you might not be aware of, a falling out with the friends? Did something happen? Was it fine until a party or an outing or an event, and now it's not? Just try and reflect back and see, was there a pattern that led up to this? But most of all, talk to her. She's 16 years old. She's well able for this. So talk to her, but do so in a non-challenging way. Just let her know that you've observed that she's withdrawn, that she hasn't been going out with her friends. Don't assume because she's not physically going out with her friends that she's not in contact with them, because so many teenagers are in constant communication in a virtual way, but might not make that physical connection. I'm not saying that's better. I'm just saying don't assume there's no contact.
Yeah, and that world can be a very strange little world, can't it?
And it can affect your mood, because you feel like you're in constant connection, but you haven't made eye contact, you haven't opened your mouth, you haven't looked up from the phone in your lap. And so you're in constant communication, but you're not getting the pro-social benefits of person-to-person interaction. So it may be worth, as I said, reflecting what you've observed and wondering, you know, wonder with her, you know, do you want to talk about this? Would you like to talk to me? Is there someone else? Would you like me to arrange for you to talk to somebody neutral, like a therapist, who might be able to help her? I mean, going into fifth year, I am assuming this is a transition from fourth year into fifth year. And, you know, there is, and schools do hype up fifth and sixth year, the work begins now. Forget about your fourth year dossing now. This is all very serious. It is a stressful time, but there are stressful times ahead. So empathize and maybe do something practical, like suggest, why don't we do a yoga or mindfulness or a something practical, go running, go walking, swimming, and that you'll go with her, but maybe sign her up to a course now in preparation for what's ahead. If what I'm saying, you're kind of going, yeah, I've done all that, I would be saying maybe go visit your GP and seek a referral for her to talk to somebody.
Okay. Take it seriously, though, I suppose.
Absolutely, I would take that seriously.
Next one for you. My daughter is aged 5, still has tantrums. It's been mildly commented on by her teacher in her end of year school report. She's the oldest of 3 girls and does not like her 3-year-old sister, but loves the baby aged 1. That's very strange, isn't it?
Not really. No. Because I suppose, like,
she doesn't like her 3-year-old sister.
But I mean, that's fair. I mean, God, that's common with siblings. That really is, especially when you've 3 and you can split and divide. And I think quite the reason, and I'm not trying to go, don't worry about it, because that's actually very difficult to parent. But in terms of developmentally, the 5-year-old and the 3-year-old is her competitor developmentally. In a way, the 1-year-old is not threatening to her. There's 4 years between her and the 1-year-old. She's in totally different developmental stage, but the 3-year-old is within arm's reach. So that's a different dynamic. I would consider opportunities for her and the 3-year-old sister to work, and by work for children, I mean play collaboratively at least twice a week to build that relationship without any expectation. But maybe they could work on building something together, designing something together, working collaboratively on a piece of art or craft, or baking with you supervising. You know, you could do something collaborative once or twice a week, and that will certainly help with that. But I think, you know, aside from her dynamic with her sister, you're saying she still has tantrums. That's not unusual for a 5-year-old, to be honest. She's the oldest as well and is observing the behaviour of younger children at home. So she may be taking her own emotional cues from their stage of development rather than her own. So it's not that unusual that she might be a little slower to mature, quote unquote. We don't expect children under 7 years old to self-regulate their emotions. They co-regulate in response to the adult in charge. So in that sense, think of yourself as a thermostat, not a thermometer. You're controlling the temperature, not measuring it. So if she needs some help, try and separate her from the action. Get her to do something with you using yourself as that thermostat to co-regulate her before you reintroduce her to whatever action was causing her to act out. I would also ask, though, are her tantrums in context or without provocation? Like, is it because something has happened or just nothing happened and it came from nowhere? Has she always been like this, or has it started since she started school? Because she may be adjusting to a more structured environment, dealing with multiple, you know, personalities and different kids all at once. And she may be just struggling to express, manage, contain her frustration in a more appropriate way at this stage. But basically address it in a doing, not saying method. Play it out with her, always reflecting the behavior you want to see from her rather than what you don't want to see.
Okay. When you describe it like that, now I'm thinking this five-year-old has a lot on her plate. She's got her three-year-old rival, her one-year-old little friend, you know.
It is.
She's
hard
the first
to be
in
five.
There.
She's trying. You know, she's sharing her parents with the two younger siblings.
Yeah.
And, you know, a three-year-old and a one-year-old is full-on demanding from a parenting point of view.
Since she has arrived, a lot has gone on in that little world.
And she was only two when her sister came along, so still at a stage of really wanting and believing that she is the world. And so along came this little usurper and rocked that for her. So she may be harbouring some simmering resentment.
On the question of the kissing, the two girls kissing. One winter when Madonna was popular, my first child, then aged five, asked me, "Mum, what's a virgin?" My brain whirled into overdrive. It was snowing outside. And I said, "You see that snow? Nobody's walked on it yet. It's undisturbed. They call that virgin snow." She skipped off happy as can be.
That is really
That's
creative
good stuff
on your feet.
Cooney. Yeah. That is
I'm going to write that
feet.
One down. That's
yes.
a good one.
Most excellent. Joanna, thank you very much
Pleasure.
For that.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.